Ryan, homecoming is just around the corner, and most importantly, it's a stripe out. So if you need gold or maroon gear, please head to homefieldapparel.com soon so you can get your maroon or gold apparel, and it will be styling for homecoming weekend.
There's great tees, there's sweatshirts, there's sweatpants, there's unique designs, and the most important thing for Luke and I, it fits comfortably, it's true to size, and it's so comfortable that even your significant other is going to want to wear it. Now, you got to go order today if you're going to have it here by the stripe up for homecoming this weekend. But at the checkout, use promo code GG23 to save 15% off your first order. Again, unique gopher designs, whatever school designs, at homefieldapparel.com. Just make sure when you check out, use promo code GG23 to save 15% today.
And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. And we welcome you guys back to this, what we're going to title the Masochist Edition. Because if you're listening to this, you love pain and you want to feel it one last time as an abomination of a fourth quarter turns into a Gopher loss in overtime as they have a 21-point lead with just, I believe, over 13 minutes left on the clock. Find a way to blow it. Find a way to lose it in overtime to a team, Luke, that had lost, I believe, 11 straight Power 5 games, that had scored 17 total points, I believe, in their first two first two Power 5 matchups combined. I still don't know that I've emotionally recovered from sitting in that press box and watching that dumpster fire start, put a little gasoline on, and then it just fully explodes with trash everywhere. But how are you tonight as we get into this game?
I'm doing okay. You know, Ryan, records are meant to be broken. Sometimes you're on the good side of them. Sometimes you're on the bad. And in this situation, the Gophers are on the bad. But I will remind you, we are one quarter of the way through the season so far. The Gophers are 2-2. They're 1-1 in conference. Not the ideal start you want, definitely.
Third of the way through, but yeah.
Oh, yes. 12 games. Boy, my math, really bad. One third of the way through. So there's a lot of season left. And frankly, the West is going to West one more time. And a lot of crazy things could happen. You know, this is where I guess I do revel in PJ's, you know, 1 week season. The games can be enjoyed and also the sorrow can be held on to just for a week and we move on, right? This is obviously a really, really tough loss. Ultimately, we don't really know how good Northwestern is. I don't think they're particularly good. I think the Gophers are better than what they showed on Saturday. But the reality is, I know the head coach doesn't believe in momentum, but I'll tell you what, Ryan, I think I believe in momentum after watching that.
If there was ever a game for the head coach to, in his own words, change his best and believe in something like momentum, it's that type of game where for yet another consecutive season, I mean, to your point, you brought up in the group chat, 2020 Maryland. And this gives me outstanding 2020 Maryland vibes.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, I cited that and I got that recommended to me by a longtime high school buddy and listener. And it was the full encapsulation of what I was watching. And it wasn't over when he brought that up, right? And, you know, just the parallels, right, that are just uncanny. Gophers blow a three-score lead in the fourth quarter, game on the road, also a game in which they have just unbelievable special teams blunders, right? You'll remember in the Maryland game, they missed an extra point, basically to seal the game, to end it. In this one, just a number of special teams blunders. And then ultimately, it's again kind of the This is the approach that PJ goes with. I guess you got to give him credit for sticking with it, even though it's come to burn him a couple times. You know, he reached to the stove, touched it, and he burned himself. But he
again.
Again, again. Yeah, again. Yeah, and exactly. Again. Again. Yeah, but the reality is, like, he plays a very risk-averse approach. And like we mentioned, you're up 21 in the fourth. You just got to keep going for it. I mean, if you look at the stats, right, everything would say, and I actually really liked that they opened the second half throwing the ball. I know it didn't lead to success, but then they sort of abandoned it after that drive. They didn't totally abandon it, but they more or less abandoned it in terms of, like, trying to be off schedule or predictable. But ultimately, the throwing was their best weapon. I know that Darius Taylor had some explosive plays, but throwing ball was by far their best weapon. And the advanced stats show that clear as day.
I don't know that I would necessarily agree with their best weapon. I think Darius Taylor is their best weapon.
That's fair. But I will say, like, if you look at their, like, the EPA per run, it was, you know, right? Their EPA per dropback is 0.36. Not that great, but their yards per dropback was 10 yards per dropback. Their yards per play was 7, right? Ultimately, a lot of that is brought to fruition because of some explosive plays, one of which is by Darius Taylor. But in the end, I think if they would have been throwing the ball a little bit more and not been so hyper conservative, we wouldn't be in the situation they would have won. Or, you know, you just make a couple plays that they didn't make.
Yeah, let's start with the passing game then, because it's a total system failure, offense, defense, special teams. But
100%.
You look at the first half, Ethan completes all of his passes, his two passing touchdowns, ends the night 14 and 19 for two scores, no turnovers. It was a step in the right direction for him, which is exactly what you would want to see after last week against North Carolina, worst game he's ever played, his own words. And bounces back with what Pro Football Focus said was his best graded game as a passer in his time as the starter. That's what you would want to see against a defense like Northwestern, where they hadn't been particularly great against the pass, and Minnesota found some ways to move the ball through the air at times. You saw Ethan make a great throw to Daniel Jackson on yet another post corner, same route that he scored that touchdown against Nebraska on, just absolutely obliterated the corner.
He also had an absolute dime to open the second half on that out. Oh, my goodness, that was a dime.
Yeah, I mean, he looked a lot more comfortable, I would say. It looked like the game slowed down for him. He didn't look as jittery. He didn't look... It looked like it's supposed to look. It looked like what I had seen at practice in the spring and in the fall, where he looked calm, cool, and collected. I certainly didn't look that way at times in the first three games, but I'm hoping that in this fourth game now, Minnesota puts a little bit more on his plate next week, because the analogy that Minnesota's offensive coordinators, whether it's been Kirk Schrock or now Greg Harbaugh, have always used is, if the quarterback doesn't eat everything on his plate, say the game plan that Minnesota put in front of them for that week, they're not going to add to it the next week.
Mm-hmm.
So I would imagine that the portion size in this proverbial analogy had been getting smaller and smaller for Ethan. So he ate everything on his plate this week. I think you and I would both agree on that. And so that would be the hope going into Louisiana, is maybe Minnesota puts a little bit more on his plate and see how he reacts to that. But I think that would be the thing I'm encouraged by, is Ethan looked better. Now, his final throw of the game, third and goal, yeah. Brevin Spanford, who we'll spend a couple minutes on Brevin Spanford, because if there's one thing everybody is very adamant with me about, it's that my Brevin Spanford takes are the worst things to come into this country in a very, very long time, which we'll get to in a bit. But yes, the throw is a little late. Yes, the throw is a little high, but Lord Almighty, do you want your 6'7" tight end to make a catch away from his body?
Mm-hmm.
It's unfortunate. Doesn't make it. Minnesota settles for a field goal, and their defense continues to absolutely implode upon themselves. But the larger point here, I think, that fans should take away from this game with the passing game specifically and with the quarterback is that it was a step in the right direction. He didn't turn the ball over. He looked accurate in his downfield throws. He did what was asked of him in this game. Would I have loved to see him throw it maybe more than 19 times in this game? You're absolutely right. You heard me on the preview say I would have loved to seen him throw it 25 times in this game. But I think an important step for this offense is you put up 34 points in a Big Ten game and you lost. I'm not as upset about, I mean, we can get into that, but I want to finish with this passing game point to you is, do you think I hit on all the right points or what would you add to
it? I think the thing you're missing, and I know we're talking passing game largely, right, but we're focusing largely on Ethan because he's the one who throws the ball. Dude, he had a couple really good reads and really good runs as well. Like, and we can't underestimate how vital that is to the success of this offense and keeping them honest, right? He had a really great run. Was it a second down or a third down? I can't remember. I'll maybe find it later.
You're talking about the fourth down read option that he finally took.
Yeah, that was just a great read. And you know, you got to continue to do that a couple times a game just to keep him honest, right? And I thought
fourth
he was
quarter read option. I should say
fourth quarter. Fourth
down. Yeah, that's my bad.
Yeah, but I mean that was a great play. But yeah, just focusing on the passing game just a little bit more. Corey Crooms again had a nice game. I thought Lamenti
a snag he made, man.
Oh man,
that was a great catch.
Two great snags, right? And he got absolutely obliterated on the one that was incomplete, and he almost held on to that. I thought that Lamenti Brockington looked good. I'd like to see him get more targets. I mean, if we're just going to be completely transparent, honest, like Chris Ottman-Bell is a shell of himself, and I'd feel so bad for that dude. Like, he was so, you know, he blew up his knee.
He played as many snaps in this game. I think he played 12 snaps for Minnesota, yeah, which is more than the first three games combined. But this is the thing that I struggle with, Luke. And I don't know if you can tell me where I went wrong with this, or maybe it's just me overthinking it. But the amount of people on the great Twitter machine that asked me during a game, where is Crab? Where is Crab? Where is Crab? How do you politely say, have you read or listened to anything I've said since January
yeah,
about what expectations for him should be? And to your point, I just don't believe, you know, one of the great Minnesota media members who shall remain nameless for right now, asked him to, how would you compare Chris Ottman-Bell right now? And I made my car analogy of a 20-gallon gas tank, and now it's at 16 gallons. He goes, I don't think I would make that, but I would make it in terms of gears. Say he had 5 gears before the injury. Now he's only got 4. And that's the issue, is he doesn't have that extra gear, in at least right now. And maybe he gets healthier and regains more explosiveness as the season continues to go on. But to your point, you can't tell me that he's a better option than Daniel Jackson or Lamenti Brockington or Elijah Spencer on the outside right now.
Yeah. And the absence of Elijah Spencer is still just kind of perplexing, right? I still not sure. Does he have one catch? I'm not even sure. But Daniel Jackson again had some good routes. I mean, he just absolutely torched that guy in that post corner, like you said. Yeah. In general, I was encouraged by the passing game. I think the one thing that we're underselling a little bit on Darius Taylor is, as good as he has been running the ball, he has been really good catching the ball as well. Like,
you can see that wide receiver background that, yes, he has, that exactly, talk about so much, is in the early part of his high school career, he was a full-time receiver, made a transition during his junior year to half receiver, half running back, mostly running back. And then his senior year of high school was his first full-time year at the running back position. So you're talking about a kid who's in year two of playing running back full-time. And he was special on Saturday night. Yeah. I don't know how else you can put it. Big run after big run, someone that forced 9 missed tackles.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's been outstanding. That fourth down run for the touchdown is one I think I'm going to remember for a long time, because if you look at that in the All 22, or if you want to go to Gopher Illustrated and look at it on the GIF rewind, he has a veteran Big Ten linebacker, a multi-year starter, square him up in the hole short of the line of game. He dips his right shoulder, keeps his feet moving, and like he continues to show, That is a very slippery 6 foot, 220 pound running back, if I've ever seen one.
Mm-hmm.
Slips out of his arms, turns the corner, puts on the Jets, and he runs out for the 40 plus yard score. Imagine where this offense would be without Darius Taylor right now.
Yeah, it's kind of scary to think. Really scary to think. Let's just wrap on the passing game quickly too. You alluded to this, and it probably is worthy of a little bit more time. Brevin has been not good. Like,
he hasn't been good. And that's
Ryan, it's not just in the passing game. He's not, he was so good pass blocking last year, or sorry, run blocking last year. He's not even good run blocking. Like, he came around on, he came around and completely fanned, I think, on two different occasions. Like, he's just not been good.
I can't explain it. I think if there's one thing about this season that is mystifying myself, and from the sources I have, I would say on the Gopher football staff, no one can explain what's going on with Brevin Spanford a third of the way through the season now. He's not making catches away from his body. He's not run blocking as consistently as he used to. And as far as I know, the man's not injured.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so perplexing to me that he went from what, last year has the most catches since Matt Spaeth, was the number one run blocking tight end, I believe, in the entire Big Ten. To this year, you look at his run blocking grade, it's a shell of what it was. I mean, a 60 is an average run blocking grade. He's at a 57. I think last year he was in the 80s. It's his worst graded run blocking year of his entire career. But here's the other thing I would say within that. I wouldn't say any of the tight ends are blocking well right now.
Yeah.
I mean that's Nick Kallerup hasn't been what he was last year. I mean, Jamison Gears is still getting his feet wet, but I go back to that fourth down that Darius Taylor broke it for a touchdown. He just swung and missed as the fullback on the guy on the outside there. I wouldn't say any of the tight ends are playing particularly well, but to your point, Luke, we all acknowledge that. Like, no one is running from that. I'm not running from that. Is the founding member of the Brevin Spanford fan club. And this, he's just not playing well.
Mm-hmm.
And if he's not going to continue to play well going forward, you're going to have to think about reducing his snaps and giving more to, say, Jamison Gears, because you can't have him missing catches. You can't have him running routes on a third and five, 2 yards short of the line of gain.
Mm-hmm.
And these are things that can't happen for a veteran player who has played a lot of football in his career. And so that's where, like I said, a lot of people trying to dunk on me for the span four takes I've had. He was great last year, folks.
Yeah.
You can't deny that.
Yeah,
but I also can't deny, like none of you can deny, I don't know how to explain it away. I wish I could tell you he's already banged up with something serious. It's clearly hampering him. I just think it's almost a case of the yips right now for that young man, which is very, very unfortunate for a senior season that he was hoping to elevate his draft stock from a late day three guy into the top 100. There were expectations for him from national prognosticators, NFL people before the season, and clearly the first third of the way, it hasn't gone his way. And so that's where I'd love to offer a solution, Luke, and I'm open to hearing how do you fix Brevin Spanford right now, but that's the scary part of this whole thing to me.
I think the thing that is encouraging is it really can't get a lot worse, right?
That's certainly the whole approach with him.
I really believe that. Like, I don't know. You hope that some sort of switch is flipped here soon for him. But man, I'm with you. You can't explain it. And to your credit, Ryan, you called it out last week. I was going to bring it up regardless. I think in our pre-production meeting, I said, I tried to give you some warning. I was going to say, I'm going to tell you this, man, but Brevin's been bad. And,
well, yeah, I'm not running from
it. And you're not.
I asked a question about Brevin Spanford at the Monday PJ presser.
Yeah.
Like, I want answers like all of you want answers, but that's the scary part of this to me, Luke.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have an answer of how do you fix Brevin.
Yep.
He just has to start to play better. He's got to be a lot more consistent. And that's easy in theory. That's incredibly easy in theory because we've seen it for big stretches of his career recently.
It's just a
lost start to his 2023, which is, again, incredibly unfortunate.
No question. He has had some stretches, though, preceding last year, I can remember that Nebraska game when they were down how many guys? Like, he was so bad in that game. Do you remember that, the, like, 2020 season?
I mean, yeah, I take everything 2020 with a grain of salt. That's, I mean, that's fair. Maybe we should have taken the Maryland game a lot more seriously in hindsight now.
Yeah.
But
okay, let's,
again, we're talking about a guy who had an 82.5 run blocking grade on PFF, and I would wholeheartedly agree with it. He was a dominant run blocker last year, and now he's sitting at a 57.6. He's gone from one of the elite run blocking tight ends in the Big Ten over a course of 12, 13 games to now through the first third of the season. It just hasn't clicked, and that's the scary part of this to me, and I'll echo the same sentiment again, and we can – I don't know if you got any other thoughts on the passing game, but I just don't know how to fix him. I don't know what the solution is other than he's just got to figure it out.
Yeah, I think a transition into the running game would be just pass protection. All in all, it was okay. You got anything more than that? Like, it wasn't great. It wasn't catastrophic. It's not like, you know, Ethan's running for his life constantly.
But certainly felt like in the second half they got way too much penetration into the backfield. Yeah, on running plays.
Up the middle for sure, yeah.
Oh, yeah, and that was the issue is I thought the offensive line played well in the first half.
Yeah.
And then in the second half, Northwestern, I thought, gave it to them. I mean, that's they'd played well for the last 10 quarters since Nebraska. And then I wasn't happy with the way that they kind of tried to finish that game. I mean, there were opportunities for that offensive line to create push to end the game, especially on those final few drives. They couldn't run the football.
Yeah.
Now, how much of that is the defense knew that Minnesota and PJ Fleck were just going to go back into their turtle shell?
Right.
So they pinned their ears back. And how much of it was on the offensive line? I think you can interpret it the way you can. I don't think there's a right answer to that. But I mean, you continue to see this is the second straight game. Minnesota essentially rotates their guards every single series with a three-man rotation of Greg Johnson at left guard and then Martez Lewis at right guard and then Tyler Cooper playing both positions, which I think Tyler Cooper has played really well through four games. For a first-year starter, yes, he's a fifth, sixth-year guy, local kid from just about an hour, I would say, northeast of the cities here, St. Croix area up there. But I've been impressed with him. You know, it's a little perplexing to me that they want to move him to number 75 around as much as they do, Luke. But that's one of the things that I'm excited to have Derek back after the Louisiana game. So if you're asking yourself, where is Derek Burns? I'm so tired of hearing Ryan Burns and Luke Buehr break down these games. I came here to listen to Derek Burns talk about it. Well, great. We'd love to have him, too. He'll be back for the foreseeable future after the Louisiana game. That's one of the things I want to get into with him about is, what has he thought about three games by then of the guard rotation? But I think a good first half for the offensive line and pass protection, being able to run block. I mean, you saw some of those holes that Darius Taylor had to run through.
Yeah.
There was one specifically that I think Darius Taylor picked up 25, 30 yards on it. The hole between Quinn Carroll and I believe it was Tyler Cooper at right guard was you could drive a semi-truck through it. That's how big the hole was. So any running back could have done that. So they had their moments against Northwestern, which they should have. I don't think Northwestern's a particularly good defensive line, but just not consistent enough, especially in the second half.
Yeah, and in general, you know, there are flashes of the run game being very good, and a lot of it was, you know, generated through explosive plays. Outside of that, you know, they weren't always super consistent. And then to your point, and I think this is the greater point, is when you go into this ultra conservative mode, you're very predictable, right? And any kind of advantage that you can have, you know, anticipating what might be coming makes it that much easier to play defense, right? And I think that's the part that's frustrating. I know that in years past, you know, we've had the benefit of watching a Mo Ibrahim, you know, just make something out of nothing. And that just isn't able to happen all the time. And ultimately,
especially with a true freshman
exactly.
In his third career, really, I mean, game is the guy. Because you remember it against Nebraska, he had one carry for 3 yards. Since then, he's now run for over 500 yards in this game against Northwestern. Mm-hmm. 127 of his yards were after contact of his 198 rushing yards on the day. But it's almost the issue here is the crux of it is Darius Taylor's great. We all see that. But it's what it does life look like after, because on his final carry of regulation on that pivotal third down, he bounces it to the outside and he gets hurt. That's why he wasn't in the game in overtime. I don't know why the TV crew didn't tell you that it was clear as day from my eyes in the press box that after that third down, right after that tackle, he is grabbing something near his ankle, calf area, hobbles off the field, doesn't return. Now, the intel I've received here since the game, here as we're recording late Sunday night, is I don't think it's incredibly serious. But the bigger point here is, Luke, Sean Tyler is on a milk carton now, mm-hmm. after which I know that there's some fans on GopherIllustrated.com that I was chatting about this with today. People think Sean Tyler's not good because of what they've seen in a very limited sample size that includes a three fumble game against Eastern Michigan.
I don't agree.
If that's
the
only thing you know about Sean Tyler, I can see it. But here's my issue with that. Sean Tyler doesn't play a single snap on offense in this entire game. Now, unless he's banged up, which I don't know about because he wasn't on the injury report, that makes no sense to me. This is still a kid who ran for 1,000 yards in back-to-back seasons in the MAC the last two seasons. You don't luck your way in for someone like Sean Tyler, who doesn't average more than 15, 18 touches a game, yet he can't be found. Zach Evans still can't be found. And it's Bryce Williams who Minnesota actually turns to here, Luke.
Yeah, that's frustrating because, Bryce Williams historically has struggled with breaking tackles.
On the entire season through four games now, I understand he missed two of them. Mm-hmm. I understand that. But in the two games that he's played in where he's gotten touches, do you know how many missed tackles Bryce Williams has forced?
Two.
Zero.
Yeah, it's frustrating.
That's the thing is, what other than him being a veteran that Fleck trusts, and I get that, and to the head coach, that's important.
Mm-hmm.
What is he providing to you in the run game?
He
caught that ball on third down for a first down. That's great.
He doesn't
third
fumble.
Down back.
Yeah.
But if Darius Taylor is going to miss the Louisiana game at any time going forward,
mm-hmm.
I don't want to see Bryce Williams touch the ball more than,
five times.
Like he did on Saturday night. You hear what I'm trying to say here with,
yeah.
Stop running your guys into the ground, especially when, as far as we know, Sean Tyler's healthy. Zach Evans traveled for the second consecutive week. I'm open to options. I just don't believe that in this current version, maybe back in 2018 when he ran for two touchdowns against Wisconsin, there was that hope and that glimmer. But that's 5 years ago now.
Yeah, for sure.
I want to see something different.
Yeah, for sure. On the day, the Gophers ultimately run the ball 2/3 of the time versus to passing it 1/3 of the time. Ryan, you and I both have been using GameOnPaper.com, which is a really nice summation using some advanced stats. I don't know if you noticed the explosive section and paid attention to that in this specific game. Did you by chance?
I did not.
Okay. So if you look at the EPA without explosive plays for the Gophers, they are a minus 2.75, right? Ryan, when rushing, if you remove the explosive plays, they are a minus 5.1. To me, it's just the glaring issue with the approach, in this whole bell cow mentality, right? Of like, we're just going to feed it and we're going to play ball control. And the stats just scream, this is a problem, right? And ultimately, the game of football has become a feast or famine with explosive plays. And this game is an absolute case study in it, right? Minnesota basically made hay on their explosive plays. Northwestern exclusively made hay on explosive plays. And we'll get to the defense and that issue in its own right. And they probably deserve even more criticism. But this is the part that just really frustrates me of, we hear Fleck talk about this week that he was going to change his approach. And I would say in the first half, they largely did. And even maybe that first even in that first drive in the second half they did, but then he went back to the same mentality again. And he's the only common denominator when it comes to this offense. So any hate you want to throw at Simon or Harbaugh or whoever, I mean, it's squarely on the head coach. That's my opinion.
Here's my stance on it, and I think you and I see it the same, and I don't think it's the popular opinion right now, but let's run people through where we're at right now. It's now year seven, correct, Luke?
Yeah, year seven as far as I'm concerned.
So you had an offensive coordinator in Kirk Ciarrocca, and then he went to Mike Sanford for a couple seasons, went back to Kirk Ciarrocca, and now you're with Greg Harbaugh as your play caller. And I think back to 2020 Maryland, where you fell apart and lost in a 3-score game on the road, lost in overtime. What did you do with a different offensive coordinator?
You did the exact same thing you did. Yeah.
2021 Bowling Green, you did the exact same thing. There were moments of the Kirk Ciarrocca era where you did the exact same thing. And now in the Greg Harbaugh play caller era, it's the same thing. I'm telling you, if you want to be angry at Harbaugh about play calls, I mean, go for it, but this is not on them. This is on Fleck, because it doesn't matter who the play call is. I firmly believe that he takes away all the power in the second half, more or less, and he tries to sit on the ball, tries to play risk averse. You have a 21 point lead with 13 minutes left in the game.
Yeah,
you have to be able to win that football game. But the issue is when the defense knows you're going to go run left, run right, pass on third down, like we all do, how do you expect to be successful in something like that? Again, you want to have variety there.
Yeah.
And Minnesota struggled in that second half with Daniel Jackson running a 9-yard out on a 3rd and 10. That can't happen. Brevin Spanford running a 3-yard stick on a 3rd and 5. That can't happen, especially with veteran guys. But here's where I'm at, just like where you're at. This is Fleck. This is Fleck being Fleck. Fleck saying we have a 97-point, whatever it was, win probability on ESPN. We're going to win that game 97 out of 100 times. And in the postgame presser, he made the comment, you know, with the way we play football, you know, we win that game 99 out of 100 times, and tonight was the one. But I hate that mentality, because you're not playing to win the football game. You know who played to win the football game? Northwestern.
Yeah.
You know who didn't? Minnesota. But again, so that's before I continue to get more worked up, did I convey where I think you and I are finding a middle ground with, if you want to be upset at Harbaugh about the lack of aggressive play calling in the second half, I just think that that's misguided, because we've seen it for year after year after year now. It's not an offensive coordinator thing. It's a PJ Fleck thing.
Yeah, and I think the one last comment I'd add to that is, well, kind of two. The irony of all this, and that he takes the power away. Yes, he's the head coach, so he has the say. The man's never been an offensive coordinator, to my knowledge, right? He's never actually called games, which I always think is a little bit unique. And then the other reality is I thought Phil Mackey had some sort of tweet, and I don't always agree with Phil Mackey, but he did say that Fleck as a game manager has really struggled at times, right? I don't remember the exact, but that was basically the sentiment. You know, he's a very good recruiter, very good motivationally, you know, probably runs a clean program, you know, an efficient program in terms of the culture piece or whatever. But when it comes to game management, there are times that it's just like unbelievably perplexing. And I think this is just,
especially in a game like this where your defense wasn't playing well. Like, I understand the score was what the score was through three quarters, but the amount of missed opportunities that Northwestern had in their deep passing game, or the amount of explosive plays that were called back because of self-inflicted wounds by Northwestern. I sat right next to Daniel House in the press box in Evanston, and we looked at each other about midway through the third quarter, where Minnesota had only allowed 7 or 10 points, and we were like, this defense is just not playing well. But the scoreboard isn't reflecting that. And then ultimately they end up 37 points. So hindsight being 20-20 there. But if schmoes like myself and Daniel House know that, you can't make me think that the head coach didn't also see the same things we did, if not more, through his lens, which if you have a strong defense like Minnesota has had the last couple of seasons, then when you do this risk-averse thing where you try to sit on the ball, yeah, well, your defense isn't going to allow points. Great. So in theory, a 21-point lead in the fourth quarter is going to be just fine. But when, especially after that three-play Bryce Kurtz drive where he just goes three for 75 and a touchdown, how you don't really start to try and change your mentality of we got to throw the entire kitchen sink at this thing if we're going to walk away, mind-boggling.
Yeah, we got to get a break here, but we do need to get into the defense. Ryan, when you're listening to your earbuds, the most important thing is that they're comfortable, right? But also that you get a good seal so you don't let the noise in. I can imagine many Gopher fans would like to keep as much of the noise out of their ears after this very tough loss to Northwestern. The best way to do that is with Comply Foam earbud tips.
I love traveling with them because in the hustle and bustle of an airport, these Comply memory foam ear tips, number one, block out the noise that's blaring across the terminal. Plus, they're comfortable in my ear. I wore these today at the O'Hare Airport through my flight all the way until my wife picked me up for about 4 hours. I took them out of my ear. My ears didn't hurt. They fit comfortably the entire time. I'm telling you, you've invested in your AirPods or your Beat Pros or whatever they may be. They're expensive to have these wireless ear pods. I get it. Now make sure that your ear doesn't hurt. Make sure that you have a memory foam seal that creates a better experience for you. So what I want you to do, you've heard me say it before, and I'm going to tell you again, complyfoam.com, find the ones that go with whatever device you have, whether it's Apple, whether it's Beats, whatever it may be. There's an extensive list there. And once you get to checkout, remember, 20% off your order with the promo code GG, as in Gopher Gridiron 23. That is promo code GG23 at checkout for 20% off your order.
All right, so let's get into this. Let's get into this defense, Ryan, and let's be really honest. This has to be one of the poorest performances that we've seen out of a Joe Rossi defense in arguably any time I can remember. And the reality, Ryan, is there were plays in the first half that Northwestern literally just missed, right? Like they just didn't execute. And if they had, this would have been a nail biter the whole way. And then they probably would have just ran away with it.
The most worrisome part of this entire loss should be to you, the listener. And to me, it's very, very clear is, what in the world's going on defense? Because if the defense is going to be absolute trash with allowing a quarterback who had thrown for 408 yards in his first three games combined to throw for 396 and four touchdowns, what are we doing here? They have now allowed 810 passing yards the last 2 weeks. I get it to an extent against Drake May, and I actually thought they played Drake May pretty well, more or less, outside of that debacle on the mass subs thing. But Ben Bryant is not Drake May, and they made him look like Drake May with the amount of times they let him. He was the most immobile quarterback they faced all season, but you would never know it.
No,
the way he was able to navigate traffic, and I get he's a veteran quarterback, but 21 points in the fourth quarter, that three-play 75-yard drive to the same receiver for all three plays, is I'm sitting here rubbing my eyes, now my temples. Luke, I'm concerned. I mean, maybe your Joe Rossi takes are going to come back with a vigor here.
Did you see some guy tweeted? So, or I guess I can't say it's a guy. I don't know who it is. But they didn't have like their first last name. But he actually said, "I'm sorry that I ever gave you shade about your Joe Rossi take." I was like, first of all, that's hilarious because Joe Rossi's been really good. And here's Ryan. This is where it got real frustrating, and it made a ton of sense to me. Joe Rossi's defense is 100% predicated on what, Ryan?
Stopping the run, which they did, but it's not allowing explosive plays. And sweet giblets and junipers, did they allow explosive plays left and right?
You ready for some stats here? I, earlier told you about the Gophers, you know, basically having a much higher EPA, you know, when passing versus when running. Do you know if you eliminate the explosive plays from Northwestern's arsenal, do you know what their explosive, do you know what their EPA per play was?
It was probably like minus six or something.
Their EPA without explosive plays was minus 14.5.
I cannot stress to you, as upset as most of the people are about the offense, I am
that was
so
it.
Upset about this defensive performance, because it is just head scratching and it can't happen.
The thing that's so frustrating is the double move on Wally, right? He got that came at a terrible time.
Gets caught looking at a veteran corner. Can't have that happen.
No,
can't. That was the worst game I think I've seen Justin Wally play in some time, which is unfortunate for him.
The irony is like nobody was throwing at him previously, right? And here, Northwestern didn't care.
Nebraska to start the season.
Yeah.
And then really doesn't get tested more or less the last 2 weeks. And then, you know, Minnesota played a combination of man and zone on Saturday night, but Fleck was irate post game about you can't take the cheese on a hitch and go like Justin Wally did. I could understand if it's someone like Tariq Watson, very inexperienced corner. Justin Wally has now played starter snaps for now his third season. You can't take the cheese like that and then give up an 80-yard touchdown. That just can't happen.
No, absolutely not. And then the other one that is just like, I couldn't even believe what I saw was the three-play drive, which was it the same receiver caught all three balls?
Yeah, Bryce Kurtz doing his best. You know, he was wearing purple, so I suppose he was doing his best Justin Jefferson impression. 10 catches for 215 yards and two scores. Bryce Kurtz is not going to make an all-Big Ten team, more than likely. Peace and love to the young man. He had the game of his life. I'm not taking that away from him.
No.
But to say that he is an all-Big Ten receiver, more than likely, at the end of the season, I would be doing a disservice to you, the listener. And that's what makes this even the more frustrating. That drive especially. You're up two scores. Explosive play number one to the receiver. Explosive play two to the receiver. And then explosive play three. And everybody's just looking around like, what in the F just happened? You could see it around the stadium. I mean, to your point that you started out the episode with, Luke, if the head coach didn't believe in momentum before Saturday night,
oh,
my goodness, do I hope he believed then. But it's...
Yeah, I mean, in reality, the Northwestern doesn't win this game without explosive plays, right? They could not sustain anything.
Almost like explosive plays are incredibly important in why we continue to talk about them on offense and the lack thereof. And on defense, this is what happens. Minus 14 without explosive plays. You're joking.
No, I'm not joking. Minus 14. If you remove the explosive plays, they were a minus 14.5. Their EPA per play without explosive plays, minus 0.2. Like incredibly mind-bogglingly frustrating.
Well, here's the thing about it too, and even Tyler Newbin on the touchdown to force overtime, that can't happen. Fleck was again irate with his future second, third round safety taking the cheese on a pump fake that opens up the slot post. So the quarterback looks a little bit to his right and pump fakes, which drags the center fielder, Tyler Newbin, to the right. If Newbin just plays where he's supposed to and not try to do too much, he's going to be right there to either pick off the pass or break it up on the slot post. Darius Green gets beat inside. I'm actually going to assume he was playing with outside leverage. It was kind of tough to tell on the rewatch there, but I would assume he's playing with outside leverage there to not get beat to the far pylon because he knows he has help in the middle of the field. Newbin takes the cheese. It's a dot of a throw and it forces overtime. But even that entire final sequence, the final drive bugs me so much because Minnesota had so many chances to just end that game and they just refused to make a play on defense. You had, there's a play in the GIF rewind. I believe it's with like about 30 seconds left. Reminder, Northwestern's got zero timeouts, Luke, for this entire final drive. Kyler Baugh defeats the center on a swim, defeats the double team, then has a free shot at Ben Bryant and just whizzes past him, comes in way too hot, way too high. If that actually, it just gets converted to a sack, Luke. No timeouts. It's like second and 25 at the 20, second and whatever at their own 25. The clock would have been ticking. It would have been exponentially harder to score there. So he misses the sack. Okay. And then Ben Bryant puts the skates on Ryan Selig, who just stops his feet in concrete for whatever reason. Again, that's, I think that's the second time we've talked about that phrase with that young man, which is unfortunate because a veteran struggled. Linebacker that came over from Western Michigan. Like, he has to know to keep your feet moving. Ben Bryant moves him and then eventually scrambles for the first down. Instead of essentially the game probably being over, if Kyler Baugh just gets that sack or Ryan Selig makes a tackle, it's a first down, the clock stops, and they keep moving. I'm telling you, Luke, there's more examples that I could point to in this game, but the inability at any point for Minnesota to make a play outside of Kyler Baugh getting that forced fumble in the early stages of the game, you had so many opportunities to make a play to end this game on defense, and Joe Rossi's unit just refused to do it on Saturday.
Yeah, and that was the part that's frustrating. Back to that, back to the drive that Northwestern had, the 14-play, 80-yard drive with 2:05, left. We got to go over. We're going to mix in some special teams and some defense together here because...
No, I'm not ready to move on to special teams.
We got it. We got to talk about this because this sets up the play, right? Like, the one, I don't actually hate punting it there. I know the defense hasn't been great. I don't...
Did you see what happened right before that play?
From what I could tell on TV, it looked like Wenger was pitching,
And Fleck were having, a very spirited discussion. So Darius Taylor gets banged up on that third down.
He wants to kick
the field. Then Minnesota commits that penalty, which I'm still unsure if it was intentional or not. That false start that Northwestern declines.
Yeah, right.
But to your point, Fleck and Wenger, I could see it from the press box and they showed it. On the TV copy back, they were having a spirited discussion. Now, I believe the discussion would have been, if I'm guessing, one of them is trying to, I'm assuming Wenger is trying to say, hey, let's try a 53-yard field goal to try and just put this thing away.
Yeah.
And my guess is the head coach said, I got 2021 Iowa flashbacks in my head where Minnesota tried something very similar from that range with Dragan Kesich, and it was blocked.
Blocked, yeah.
Now, we know how this story ends, Luke, because Minnesota punts it from their own 37.
A pretty good punt from where it was. I mean, like, he put
Mark
it right
Crawford
where it needed to be.
Mark Crawford couldn't have done anything. I would not want Mark Crawford to do anything differently with that specific punt.
No, and you just...
I think it was a great punt.
Yeah, and Q Redding had
Moses of Mary, Quentin Redding. What? That just can't happen.
No,
it can't happen. You have to know where. I've never seen someone look so utterly confident that I'm going to pin them right at the one, and he's 3 yards into the end zone.
Yeah, the funny thing about
that, Brady Weeks' face, the long snapper, yes, puts his palms to the sky like, brother, what are you doing?
Yeah, that was bad. But, again, that's 19 yards that Northwestern gets, right?
Like, correct. They would have a 36-yard net that pins him at the one.
Yeah.
Because that should have been pinned. If Quentin Redding just fair catches that ball before it hits the ground, because he would have
catches at the five. Yeah.
They're at the five.
Yeah.
But instead, it's a 17-yard net punt in the most critical situation. I know so many of you are so sick and tired of hearing us complain about special teams. This can't happen, or even the punt before that, Luke. Minnesota punts from their own 44. Mark Crawford puts it into the end zone. There's not even a gunner down the field to field that punt.
Yeah. Well, did what it looked like on TV to me, maybe you had a better perception on that one, was that they took the cheese on the fair catch, and they ran up to the guy faking the fair catch, and then it sailed right over their heads.
It could be.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not going to disagree with that, but you can't also have two of the most critical stages of this stage of the game.
Mm-hmm.
and you have one, and you have both of them go into the end zone for touchbacks. For a man that is so predicated on field position, yeah. I don't know what else to say about Rob Wenger. That
I think the thing that I find so ironic in all of this is we have a player like Sean Tyler who let's just make bold assumptions.
Doesn't touch the ball the entire game, has yes. three kickoff return touchdowns and can't find a way. Are we fully committing to special teams here? Because
we're going to get back into defense. No, but what I want to say is like Sean Tyler doesn't sniff the field, right? And we assume it's because the ball is a program and he put the ball on the ground, right? He's held to a really high standard. But here we are 7 years in, right? I guess however you want to define it, this could be year six if we started from, you know, year zero, but let's call it year seven for the sake of math. And here we are, and Ryan, it's the same guy, it's the same problems. And
they've waved the white flag on ever returning another kick in year seven, which is just
but the I don't know, the thing that like why not hold your staff to a higher standard, right?
I'm glad you're saying it, not me, because maybe people will start to listen.
I mean, there hasn't been accountability there, but we're gonna hold Sean Tyler, you know, to this really high standard and not give him another chance, because we know that failure is growth. So you should get another chance to make good on that or change your best. And the reality in this situation is that we're holding a different standard for the athletes than we are for the people making the money.
So yes, I mean, you don't have to pitch me on this, but to your point on the return game, first two games of the season, Minnesota loses 18 yards of field position on kickoff return in their first game. Same thing happens in the second game. They lose their offense 18 yards of field position. What did they do last week against North Carolina? They fair caught everything, so they got it at the 25. I get it. And then they essentially did the same thing against Northwestern outside of one Q Redding return that got them to, I think, 28. So you've lost 33 yards of field position in year seven. You have Sean Tyler, who doesn't touch the ball on offense once, dressed for the game, is healthy as far as we know, has three kickoff return touchdowns. He can't find a way onto the field as a return man. I mean, they have just essentially waived. It's like Fleck said, yeah, we tried the first two games, lost a lot of field position, so now we're just going to wave the white flag.
Yeah, but this
is... Why is that okay? Why is the standard so incredibly low there that he'll gloss over that? But to your point, Sean Tyler has three fumbles, can't find the field again.
Yeah, and who knows what Zach Evans has done, but he's in the doghouse. But let's get back to...
The only saving grace, by the way, of special teams, and he deserves every word of praise in my mind, is Dragan Kessler.
Yeah,
The only thing outside of Brady Weeks, who, again, nobody wants to talk about the long snapper until something bad happens. Brady Weeks has been outstanding for 4 years. Dragan Kessler has been outstanding through the first four games of the season for a college kicker and the kickoff guy. Mm-hmm. But every other part, my goodness, folks, just wanted to say Dragan Kessler, one of my favorite human beings on this team, big man, big personality, and obviously you saw it with a 50-yard field goal as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, interesting, give him the 53-yard chance. I mean, he kicked.
He's got the leg to do it.
But I truly believe that
2021 Iowa game just flashed back in the head coach's head, and he just couldn't pull the trigger.
That's fair. Let's get back to defense. I want to go back to the last offensive possession outside of overtime that ended up in that touchdown. One question for you on the face mask for Ja, absolutely a face mask. He's 100%. Also absolutely held on that play, is he not?
Yeah.
I mean, shouldn't there have been offsetting penalties there? I mean, at least that was my vantage point. Like, he's literally just putting his arm out trying to get something because he's literally getting held.
There were times in that game where I would turn to Daniel House and say he got held. And we'd look up on the TV and watch it back, and House would be like, yeah. Well, sitting right next to us as well was a former Big Ten referee. And we would look to him at times and be like, are we missing something? And he looks at us and just kind of shakes his head and say, you're not missing anything.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, he was held at times. I'm not going to disagree with that. But again, I think there were just too many opportunities.
Oh, I'm not trying to make an excuse for that, right? No. Like, you still got to overcome that, you know, et cetera. But like, I just want to make sure that we're acknowledging, I still think that Ja has been playing well at times. I mean, he's not been amazing, he gets held more than anyone.
Yeah, I mean, he flashes about as much as anyone in pass rush. He just got to stay more disciplined, I would say. You'll see at times when Ja doesn't get home. I mean, you have penalties like you saw in that final drive, which can't happen. But he'll also get too deep in his rush, which allows the quarterback to step up quite a bit. Now, yes, you want more interior pressure from Kyler Ball or Devin Eastern or Logan Richter, whoever it may be. But I think sometimes he gets a little bit too wound up and kind of plays a little bit too fast and out of control, which I would much rather tone back a guy than ask him to turn it on. But it's something to where, I mean, they got to figure it out. I mean, he's been probably their most consistent pass rusher, more or less, outside of Kyler Ball, who, again, I thought Kyler Ball generated pressure. He just didn't get home on these, which I think Ja and Kyler are doing a pretty good job.
Yeah, Danny Strigow had another sack. You know,
and Anthony Smith met at the quarterback there, which was nice to see.
Yeah, he led them in tackles. He's looked good in moments as well. You got to give Jack Henderson some props on his sack as well. That was executed well and a great play call by Rossi there. But in general, I do want to say that
linebacker is struggling.
Yeah, they're struggling a lot.
I mean, Maverick Baranowski getting two late hit penalties. What are you doing? Like that, I don't understand that one for the life of me. Just two boneheaded plays. They miss Cody Lindenberg, which I don't know what to tell you on Cody Lindenberg at this point. Warmed up before the North Carolina game, I thought he looked pretty decent. And then before the Northwestern game, he didn't even warm up. Now, we don't get to go to practice. We're never at a practice during the season. So we don't know if he's practicing, but I would say my optimism from last week to the Northwestern game has now shrunk quite a bit, I would say, because if he's not even warming up before the game now, I mean, did he retweak whatever the injury was?
Yeah,
is it going to be a lost season for Cody Lindenberg, which isn't great because Minnesota's linebackers are just so incredibly inconsistent right now. And that's what happens, I guess, more or less, is what the counter argument would be when Devin Williams and Maverick Baranowski are on their fourth career starts. Ryan Selig, I think, hasn't met expectations for what he was brought over to do. But Luke, there's just no way of getting around it. I think the linebackers weren't good enough in coverage. The linebackers didn't make enough plays. They were in positions to make tackles, didn't make tackles. I mean, that was part of the issue with why couldn't the defense ever consistently really get off the field there? And when the moments mattered most, or even on that final touchdown in overtime, I believe it was either Tyler Newbin or it was either Maverick Baranowski there. My gut tells me it was Baranowski. Gets caught looking in the backfield, forgets where he is, and the tight end just runs wide open across the field for a touchdown. Missed assignments and missed tackles are never going to play.
The irony of that overtime touchdown was they ran that play earlier, Ryan, and they missed the throw, right? It was just a bad throw. The Gophers also got more pressure on that previous play. But they just missed the throw and then came back and bit them where they had gotten away with it before. The other thing I wanted to mention too was the missed interception. Was it Trayvon Jones had one that he should have intercepted and didn't bring down?
He and Darius Taylor, I think were right around that one.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh man, that was another frustrating moment of like an opportunity.
They had another tipped one that fell in between about five guys as well.
Yeah. Just again, you had some opportunities, didn't execute, but you also just gave up way too many explosive plays. And the reality is this is now two games in a row, right? After breaking the, you know, under 20 point streak, now you've got two games in a row where you've given up 30 plus, and, you know, one to a very good team and one to what we thought was not a very good team. I mean, it'll be interesting to see how Northwestern season plays out, but it's riddled with explosive plays killing you.
You're stopping the run. You stopped Cam Porter, 16 carries for like 60 yards or something. But your pass defense, I brought it up earlier. You've given up over 800 yards combined your last two games. Ben Bryant just went for 396 and four touchdowns against you. If this is the way it's going to be going forward, I mean, good googly moogly, man. I mean, this there's and that's the thing is it's not just one position or just one guy. I mean, it's just a complete system failure on that defensive side of the ball, especially in that fourth quarter. Is just in game one, Newbin and Wally made plays as the stars on this defense. And that's where, I mean, what changed? Newbin and Wally didn't make plays to save them. And I would argue they were part of the problem with this entire defensive effort on Saturday night, Luke.
Yeah. And the other thing is this defense right now is drawing some parallels, at least in the last two games, to that 2020 defense where it's head scratching, you know, big, long, explosive plays. And that's the really frustrating thing. We'll see if they can get it turned around. Ultimately, Rossi has shown over a really good sample size that he's found ways to get the most out of players, and you hope that's what you'll see going forward through the remainder of this very, very tumultuous schedule. Ryan, when you're up by 21 points, sometimes the best thing you can do is be really conservative, or you could just get some really good insurance to make sure that you're actually going to win that game. And if you're going to do that, where would you go, man?
Oh, what a transition into the Burns Insurance Agency in downtown Oakdale, Minnesota, an independent insurance agency owned by my father, Bill Burns, someone that puts your needs first, providing you with the service that you deserve. Like a win in the 21-point fourth quarter. Now, he is licensed in North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa, Michigan, New York, Florida, and Utah. If you're looking for a quote on your commercial, your home, your auto, your boat, your whatever it may be, I can give you countless examples, including myself, where he has saved me thousands of dollars, whether it's through my home and auto, whatever it may be, and it's great. Great service. So if you want to check them out today, go to insurancebyburns.com or email him at bill@insurancebyburns.com.
Ryan, last time we broke some news in an advertisement about Team Dinkytown Real Estate Group. They were able to sell their first home and made a more than $4,000 donation to Dinkytown athletes, and that money
that's
is going
still
to
the wild to me, right. Which is outstanding for the program itself.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing that's crazy, right? You just need to be able to buy or sell the house. You don't have to do anything additional. There is no additional fees added to this. They are taking a part of their commission and putting it towards towards Dinkytown athlete to the sport of your choice. Ryan, the most important thing is this isn't a startup. This group has more than 20 plus years of experience. They have 7 plus agents. Ryan, they're growing. They want to bring in former athletes to be agents, etc. So if you are considering buying or selling your house, reach out to Team Dinkytown Real Estate Group at teamdinkytown.com or call them at 612-250-8562. Again, Team Dinkytown Real Estate Group for all your real estate needs. Okay, so Ryan, the reality is that we typically use this segment to talk about Big Ten games, and we will get to that. But I think more importantly, here we sit 2-2, right? I think both of us, you know, we both predicted this game was going to be a win for Minnesota, both in the preseason and in our game preview. Neither of us were correct. We both, if people took our betting advice, they did absolutely horrific in this game.
It looked great through three quarters. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, it looked awesome. So I guess if you picked the over, of which neither of us did, you did great. But then, you know, Minnesota didn't cover as well, obviously, because it's hard to cover when you're picked to win. But we probably should settle the score here real quick. I did get Andy Greeter to DM me. I'll send you the screenshots. 14.5 over under. I took the under. Andy said it was an under. Would you agree?
I thought I took the under, but Yeah, there's, you can't tell me. Maybe with all the students that were there for like the first and second quarter, maybe there was over 14,000. My God, was that a pathetic atmosphere.
But yeah.
Again, that's Ryan Field. Good thing it was a night game, Luke. Remember yeah. that. God, such an so abomination.
Bad. Okay, but we should probably just address, you know, where are we now? It's a 2-2 season. You're a third of the way through the season. You're 1-1 in conference. Yeah, where do we go from here, Ryan?
Well, ain't that the question? In terms of, we've seen 4 games. You got 8 remaining. You got 8 guaranteed left. I don't know how you can accurately prognosticate what this team is going to be, because just like essentially every other team in the West, they haven't looked particularly good. And I guess let's start on offense. We know there's issues. We've seen the issues now for 4 games, Luke. But the thing I come back to is I truly believe at this stage, the overwhelming problem in how they lost this game going into the turtle shell in the second half, it's just never going to change. And that's where a lot of people were. This is probably my favorite bit that fans do. After the game, I got hundreds of tweets just saying, you got to hold the man accountable. Ask the tough questions. You classic media, never ask the tough questions. Have we learned at this stage, Luke, let me ask you this very simple question. With PJ Fleck, it's I hear what you say, but I trust what you do.
Mm-hmm.
Fair or not?
Yeah, I think at this juncture, we've not. I would say last week was the first time, Ryan, that I felt like he was changing his kind of rhetoric and, you know, what he was trying to communicate. And the reality is it was more of the same.
So we've seen it now from 2020 to 2021 to now this meltdown offensively, defensively, special teams in 23. I just don't ever believe that they will change into a play-to-win mindset in the second half when they have a lead. Now, I would argue they should if the defense is going to continue to be this bad, I would say. But, I mean, if Darius Taylor's healthy and Ethan Calliope-Mattis continues to eat what's on his plate and then add a little bit more each week, you're going to be just fine. But I don't know what to expect in a given week from the Gopher offense, Luke.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think another thing we can look at is, you know, you look back to previous seasons. You can look back even to as recent as 2021, right? They started 2-2. They lost to Ohio State to start the season, beat Miami of Ohio, then went into Colorado and drubbed them, and then lost a real shocker to Bowling Green. The difference now, Ryan, though, is in that season, you know, they didn't have nearly the kind of the real challenging schedule that they have facing them ahead, right? In that season, they ended up finishing 8-4 and then winning the bowl game and ended up 9-4 in 2021. I think being bowl eligible is still absolutely on the table, and that should be the goal. I think 7, I picked 8. I think 7 is still attainable, but I think it's going to be very challenging. I think the reality is this season, Ryan, ultimately is about growth for some of these younger players, whether that's Darius Taylor, Ethan Calliope-Mattis, Lameke Brockington, Daniel Jackson, who should be back. You know, there, you've got a lot to grow here going into these next season. You could go onto the defensive side with, you know, Baranowski, Darius Green, you know, whoever you want, Tariq Watson, Justin Wally, who come back. You got a lot of these guys on the defensive line as well, but you got to put these guys into situations and really have them grow if you're hoping to take strides into the next season. The West is wild, though, man. Crazier things have happened. Could Minnesota win the West and have a loss to Northwestern? I think it's totally feasible.
That's the most westing of the whole West. I'm glad you brought up 2021, by the way, because that's a good point. When the last time we had an episode like this, right around the same time in late September when Minnesota lost to Bowling Green, to your point, they then reeled off 4 straight wins in October.
The four straight wins, though, were Purdue, Nebraska, Maryland, Northwestern.
I mean, right, but the thing I'm trying to draw the conclusion of is 4 different running backs for Minnesota in 4 different games were different leading rushers.
Yeah.
You had Trey Potts, Bryce Williams, Kai Thomas, and Bucky Irving. In separate, in each one of those four wins were the, I guess, the leading rusher. It's not unheard of. Now, it also helps in all those games. Minnesota allows 13 points, 16 points, 14 points, 23. I mean, that's what it brings me to is the defense has to figure it out. Because if the defense is just going to be allowing explosives left and right, and they're just going to be a pass funnel defense, I mean, they're going to get torched this weekend. I mean, they're just going to get torched going forward. And that's where, Luke, I can't explain why they are a pass funnel. They can stop the run well. They have stopped the run well, I would say, each of the four games, more or less. The defensive line is controlling the line of scrimmage. I mean, they just can't stop the forward pass. And that's where you'd like to think that history would tell you they're going to figure it out here pretty quick. But and that's the thing they got to figure out, Luke, is how do they stop the forward pass?
Yeah, it'll be interesting because they'll face Louisiana and then they'll face Michigan, who they're probably going to play an even better quarterback in J.J. McCarthy, right? I mean, he's even better than
J.J. McCarthy, I think, is going to end up being in the same tier as Drake May eventually. I don't know if J.J. McCarthy is a year away from that tier or not. But, I mean, that guy is very, very talented. You still got Kyle McCord on the schedule. You still have, I mean, you have a gambit of quarterbacks left.
Yeah, absolutely. In the West is just going to be interesting. You know, you talked about those coin flip games. I think they're all still coin flips, right? I think every single one of them.
I could see them losing any game on their schedule going forward, and it wouldn't shock me if they won, I mean, seven of them. Like, I'm not saying Minnesota's going to win seven of their next eight games. Miss me with these weird maroon and gold colored takes. I'm just telling you, as we're about to get into here, as we transition to what happened in the Big Ten West, the Big Ten West is not good at all. I mean, there's not a team that really stands out. And you can say Wisconsin potentially, but as we lead into that game here, Luke, on Friday night, the big news out of that game, other than Wisconsin winning,
Chez Malusi,
I believe, has a fractured fibula and now is going to be out for the season. So he was a perfect fit to me for what Phil Longo wanted to do with that Badger offense. And now here's my worry if I'm a Badger fan. We've seen Braylon Allen in recent seasons wear down as the season went on because Malusi had been injured. Now, it's unfortunate that he's got a season-ending injury now from, you know, what I've at least read from Wisconsin 24/7. They really don't feel good about another guy behind him right now, Braylon Allen that being. Now, Braylon Allen's obviously a guy who can handle a big workload, but that's my worry if I'm Wisconsin, Luke, is how does Braylon Allen hold up now? Because now you got eight more games left on the schedule, and we've seen a history of him not holding up well as we get into the latter stages of November.
Yeah, let's move on to Rutgers in Michigan. Rutgers... early looked like they were going to make a game of it, maybe.
75-yard RPO slant for a score, and Kirk Shiraka's running all the way to the bank, baby.
Yeah. Looked like they might make a game of it, 14-0 at half, but then Michigan just ran away with it, scoring 17 unanswered. Well, actually, 24 unanswered, to be honest. But, yeah, 31-7, this game went under. Ultimately, you know, Michigan's real good and they do what they do. And I think that Rutgers is going to give some people some trouble. But Michigan is just too good and just warm down.
I'm telling you, I feel very good a third of the way through the season about my Michigan is going to win the East take.
Yeah.
J.J. McCarthy looked fine in this game. And I mean, if a fine quote unquote game for him is 70% of his passes being completed and no picks, yeah, that's going to play, especially when Blake Corum runs for nearly 100 yards and two scores. But to your point, I think Rutgers is a very interesting team because Joe Harris-Simiak's got that thing clicking. And that's where this is a team that Rutgers has to travel to Madison and to Iowa City. I think, especially with the way that those two teams are constructed, they're going to give those two teams a run for their money.
All right, Ohio State won into Notre Dame and won 17 to 14, basically a walk-off there. You saw some of the comments from Ryan Day. He didn't take too nicely to those questioning his team. Ultimately, you know, they go out with the victory. Very much a low-scoring affair when everybody thought it was going to be an absolute high-scoring affair. The over-under was 55. Interesting that there was only 10 players on the field for Notre Dame there on the last play. But a great game. I haven't had a chance to watch all of it. I did tape it. I'm hoping to get that on the 60 replay and get a chance to watch that one because it looked awesome. I love these kind of old school defensive battles, but ultimately that's a game that you don't often see Ohio State win, and they won.
I'm so glad there were four night games this weekend.
So you couldn't watch it.
The game of the year potentially so far. And I wasn't able to watch a single second of it because of Minnesota's overtime game. Yeah, so thrilled about that, Luke. It's not like there's only one 11 a.m. game or anything. But, yes, to your point, Ohio State wins a big game. Notre Dame, for the umpteenth season, is now not going to – it doesn't look like a college football playoff contender. They're a good team, not a great team. And Ohio State did this, I believe, with Marvin Harrison Jr. Going down with, I believe, an ankle injury. But that final play, I did see that. I mean, the way Notre Dame's defense even lined up in that, just begging you to run the ball. I hadn't seen that they had 10 guys on the field as well.
Yeah.
Inexcusable by Notre Dame, especially in a scenario like that. But Ohio State keeps their playoff chances alive.
Well, a West team went into Happy Valley and left the whiteout. Getting basically blown out for the second season in a row. Penn State stuck 31 on the Hawkeyes, who were unable to score. They actually had as many first downs as they had turnovers, which were four on the day. If you're keeping track of the Brian Ferentz drive for 325, it took a detour this weekend. It was pretty tough for them. I'll say this. For my money, Penn State is very much in the conversation for a chance to win the East. And I think that they are probably a slot ahead of Ohio State for me at the moment.
I mean, you almost could put them in mini tiers to me in terms of Michigan in a mini tier, then Penn State, and then Ohio State, which is weird to say because Ohio State just went into Notre Dame and knocked them off. But that's where I can't wait to see these guys obviously play one another. But to your also point with Iowa, four first downs and four turnovers, 0 points. Like, you thought Minnesota played horribly in the whiteout game last year when they went there. At least they put up 16 points. At least they drove the ball a little bit. I mean, 6 of 16 passing for 56 yards, 17 of 20 on the ground. I mean, I'm telling you guys, I know you're down in the dumps because the Gophers just blew an inexplicable game. But I'm telling you, there isn't a good team in the West. I know Iowa's defense is great, but this offense, especially without Luke Lachey, 6 fumbles on the night for Iowa.
Lost, yeah. Okay, Florida Atlantic definitely had people with an elevated heart rate in Champaign this weekend. They were up 10-0 after the first quarter. Illinois ended up being up 14-10 at halftime and ended up winning 23-17. This is a very close contest. I don't know what to say, man. I don't think that Illinois is definitely not the team they were last year. They definitely miss Chase Brown. And ultimately, this is a team that's doing a little soul searching.
And I was reading Jeremy Warner, who does an outstanding job for us on the Illinois 24/7 site. And that's where the thought process for that team going into that game was, let's show the rest of the Big Ten and give ourselves, you know, a feel-good game. Well, they were in for a fight to the very end. As to your point, they start off the game horribly, down 10-0 at the end of the first quarter. They end up scoring 23 unanswered before a late touchdown from the house that Lane Kiffin built makes it a 23-17 game. But I don't think Illinois – there are so many teams in the West I could just put into a bag and you could pull them out and they're all in the same tier to me. It's whatever team wants to show up whatever week. Illinois is certainly within that mix to me. They're also 2-2 heading into their final game this weekend.
Yeah. A Gopher opponent this season, Michigan State, lost to Maryland 31-9. Michigan State moves
awful to start this game. I don't know if you watched it.
I did.
Maryland came out swinging.
Yeah.
And Michigan State found a little bit in the middle, but then just that's not the effort that they needed. If you were going to try and convince me that Michigan State is now going to pull themselves together going forward, especially now that there's four games through the season, and as Luke and I have discussed, now you're going to have to wait and see, do they have some guys hold out to maintain their redshirt possibility? Do they not? Michigan State went with a few different quarterbacks in this game. But Maryland continues to hum along, man. 4-0.
Early
luck out from Mike Locksley, Luke.
Yeah, Mike Locksley in the early part of the season. I mean, this is a borderline ranked team for me if they're not ranked coming. That came out probably today, didn't it? I probably haven't even looked. But this is a team that looks dangerous. Let's see if they can keep the momentum going. Louisiana Tech lost going into Lincoln 28-14. I don't know. In the end, I don't think this Nebraska team is terribly good. They were able to do just enough running. I think their defensive philosophy and will be their identity under Matt Rhule. But you know, they get another win. But this isn't a great Louisiana Tech team.
No, and there was a lightning delay is what caused the start of everybody panicking about the Gopher game not showing up on BTN. But no Jeff Sims again. Passing game 8 of 18. I mean, it's not great, but again, they got running quarterbacks there at Nebraska. Their starter goes 19 for 157. Anthony Grant takes on a featured role as the tailback there, 22 for 135 and a touchdown. I mean, it's just going to be tough for Nebraska when they face competent defenses. If they can't complete a forward pass, you've seen it like I have with Minnesota at times. It's so tough to win games that way, just to rely only on the ground game.
Yep, the Zips of Akron almost pulled up the big upset against the Indiana Hoosiers.
Four overtimes.
Had to go to the two-point conversion flavor there at the end. Ultimately, Indiana prevails. This is not a great team, but they found the win, Ryan. I'm still feeling pretty good about Halloween Tim Allen being employed. That's what we're tracking here. I don't think we need to talk about this one anymore.
I mean, it's Luke gets to take a little bit of a deep breath for another week.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how great you feel about that. But four overtimes, Joe Moorhead almost pulls off the upset. And Indiana just survives by the skin of their teeth.
Yeah, so it should be fun to get the Gophers back at TCF Bank Stadium. I'm interested to see what the showing will be for homecoming at 11 o'clock kick. I mean, we'll be back to preview it, Ryan. And I imagine there's plenty of tickets to get and get out there. It's all about
it's
life.
It's supposed to be 80 degrees and beautiful on Saturday. And oh, by the way, I think Minnesota is
10-point favorite.
Something like a 13-point home favorite, which
I'm not sure. It's going to be interesting. I'll say this. I often talk about on this podcast how life is about experiences. If you've never been to a Gopher football game, I imagine many of you who are listening to have, just get out there. It's fun. Win, lose, or draw. Getting a chance to experience with friends or family. Just get out and enjoy the game. It's homecoming. It'll be a blast. You won't regret it. We'll be back to preview it, Ryan. And again, thank you all of you for listening. It's so fun to do this. It's so fun to break it down, even in these really, really tough games. I feel better after this. I don't know about you, Ryan.
It was a cathartic episode for me.
Yeah.
I'm able to now put it behind me, see if Minnesota can go 1-0 in the Louisiana season. There's opportunities there for them to continue to find a path to 7 wins, which I think we both predicted, or maybe you were at 8.
I was at 8, actually, yeah.
But the sun rose this morning.
Yep.
It's going to rise again on Monday. I know this one stings. It stings for everybody. But I feel a lot better after talking it through with you, Lucas.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, thank you all for listening and making this possible. And go Gophers.